online and on display.
Introduction. Ironically, computer networking has done much to bring people together who would otherwise never have the chance to connect. And while this has created opportunities for communication and commerce, the impersonal and disconnected nature of online contact has also encouraged some folks to behave in less than respectable ways. While remembering who hackers are in the larger world, what they want, and how they hope to get it is critical, it is also important to keep in mind how your own behavior can contribute to the cultural climate of the Internet. What you do and say while online is just as important as keeping yourself safe, as it promotes the idea of digital wellness and the need for human dignity, regardless of the technology being used. The legality of hacking. One of the most important ideas in cybersecurity today is boundaries. How are they established, and how are they protected? This is already something we innately understand because boundaries, whether you realize it or not, are everywhere in the real world. Don't go in that door. Don't drive down that road. Don't touch this. Don't touch that. Our lives are positively brimming with various lines and thresholds we are not supposed to breach. While these boundaries are put in place for good reason, to protect personal space, assets, and safety, what's the big deal about crossing a few lines on the Internet? It's all just virtual anyway. Tapping away on a keyboard while sitting quietly in your own room can feel like a solitary and anonymous experience. But the truth is, you're never really alone when you're online. And a lot of harm can be done when you don't acknowledge this reality and conduct yourself in an ethical or morally upstanding way. Your online persona needs to have the same level of integrity as the one you present to the real world. Since we are on the topic of digital boundaries, let's talk about one of the biggest threats to all of them, namely cyber attacks. Cyber laws in the United States are notoriously strict and often prohibit activity that doesn't even feel illegal. For example, what's the difference between illegal hacking and testing without permission? If you don't have malicious intentions, is it still a crime? Largely, the answer is yes. Sometimes, just tiptoeing to a digital fence and peeking over is enough to land you in hot water. The Computer Fraud and Abuse Act, CFAA, enacted by Congress in 1986, is the main overarching law currently in place to criminalize computer-related actions like hacking. This may include the distribution of malicious code, trafficking passwords, or a denial of service attack. Although the law has seen many amendments over the years, its terms are crystal clear.
In summary, doing any of the following things on purpose would be considered a criminal offense under this law. Click to reveal criminal offenses.
Accessing a computer without authorization or exceeding existing access through unethical means, regardless of the reason. Accessing any non-public computer belonging to a U.S. department or agency without permission, regardless of intention. Sharing a program, information, or code as a result of unauthorized access. Damaging or losing a protected computer due to unauthorized conduct. Breaching a password or similar boundary without authorization. Extorting, threatening, or harming anyone as a result of unethical online behavior. Compromising protected information or confidentialities through unauthorized access. Using unauthorized information for personal gain. Although this list is not terribly long, the legal implications of each breach are far-reaching and can translate into a great deal of trouble for anyone who treads upon them, even lightly. This act creates a private right of action for individuals and companies to sue and/or recover damages, otherwise known as money, from anyone who acts in violation of the act. There have been a number of notable cases prosecuted under this act, both criminal and civil, including cyberbullying, website hacking, creation of cyberworms, misuse of protected information, code manipulation, distribution of software bugs, and data vandalism. Legal issues around the Internet can be tricky because severity is interpreted in different ways by different people. To see this more clearly, let's look at a famous case where a young hacker paid the ultimate price for a crime which many say was fairly innocent in nature. The tragic tale of Aaron Swartz. When trying to evaluate the efficacy of hacking laws, the unusual case of Aaron Swartz is one to remember. Its tragic details are one of the leading reasons why these laws should not be taken lightly and why many critics feel some level of legal reform is necessary in the future. In 2011, Swartz gained unauthorized access to the computer network at MIT and downloaded 2.7 million academic papers from its JSTOR service. These papers did not have any monetary value per se and were actually free and available to anyone who visited the campus. But Swartz decided to access them illegally because it was easier and would allow him to distribute the material as he saw fit. While this could hardly be considered similar to Grand Theft of the Hope Diamond, some authorities were none too happy about his breach. JSTOR did not press charges, but the U.S. Department of Justice decided to prosecute him. Why? Because he violated an online boundary by downloading documents with an intent to use them elsewhere. Even though they were just paper, with no real monetary value, according to the law, stealing is stealing. Swartz was eventually charged with 13 felony counts, the maximum amount possible, which meant he could face up to 50 years in prison and a fine of up to $1 million. He was offered a plea deal, but he did not want a felony conviction on his record, so he agreed to a trial. 2 years into the battle, and just 3 months before his court date, Swartz could no longer handle the pressure and public scrutiny, so he committed suicide in his Brooklyn apartment. His family, and much of the public, blamed his death on an unfair and overzealous reaction to an innocent hacking crime. It was obvious the justice system was more concerned with making an example of his behavior than anything else. He didn't hurt anyone, and he didn't steal anything of value, but he did something even more frightening in the eyes of the law. He proved that he could, and he used that ability to commit a crime. For that alone, he was subjected to the maximum penalty and lost his life as a result. Does this mean hacking is completely off limits? Not at all. There are still plenty of ethical ways to fool around with systems while testing both the boundaries and your own abilities. A simple Google search can reveal a lot of sites specifically set up to be hacked by newbies looking for a digital challenge. And for the more advanced, there are bug bounty programs offered by many websites and software developers that allow ethical hackers to receive recognition, and even payment, for finding bugs or vulnerabilities in their system. Given the potential for a real career, there are plenty of organizations who encourage young hackers to learn more through competitions, special educational programs, and online challenges. All you have to do is approach the subject and the internet with honesty and a positive intention. Hack for the wrong reasons, and you will regret it. Hack for the right reasons, and you will find exciting challenges. The internet needs good people like you. Cyberethics and netiquette. Throughout all of this discussion, the word ethics comes up again and again, mostly because as moral principles that govern human behavior, either online or in the real world, they are incredibly important. Ethics are concerned with the classic principles of right and wrong, and how these beliefs are represented through our behavior. And when applied to online behavior and etiquette, the correct or acceptable way of communicating is known as netiquette. In a nutshell, these core rules seek to ensure everyone is using the very best judgment while on the internet. Remember the human. This is not just the golden rule of the internet, but of life. As an ethical lesson, it sits at the core of our childhood learning and asks us to always remember what it feels like to be in another person's shoes. Much like empathy, remembering that online behavior does affect real people in the world is essential to making smart decisions. No, you cannot see their facial expressions, hear their voices, or watch their body language, but the people on the other side of your internet communications have a lot of the same feelings, desires, and dreams as you. It can be easy to forget this fact when hiding out behind a computer screen. In the same way people feel emboldened to curse at others or make obscene gestures while driving in a car, it feels more doable to act inappropriately when you're not physically close to your target. If you have trouble judging your own actions in this realm, just ask yourself whether you would say the same thing to someone's face. If the answer is no, then you know what to do. Remember your real life. Are you a law-abiding citizen in the real world? If the answer is yes, you shouldn't have any real problem locating your own digital ethics. You know the right thing to do. Yes, it can be easier to get away with bad behavior when there's no human in the room to hold you accountable, but you are still you, and you should still conduct yourself and your business with the same degree of integrity and kindness. From email to social networking to blogging to texting, you have plenty of opportunities to present your best self to the world. When it comes to online ethics, there is no confusion. Be true to yourself and who you are in the real world. Remember your surroundings. Although your computer screen isn't very big, the world behind it most certainly is. When you enter a new place, like a classroom or a store or someone's home, you probably look around and take note of where you are and what is around you. This is how we orient ourselves to a location and form a sense of how we should behave and even what to watch out for. When you enter a domain in cyberspace, like a website or a social platform, you need to take a virtual look around and assess what you see, especially if you've never been there before. Spend some time getting a feel for the space and how it is asking you to engage and share. If anything feels uncomfortable or off, it probably is. Once you feel safe and able to make smart movements, go ahead and participate, enjoying the many benefits the internet has to offer. Remember bandwidth. As we know, the word bandwidth in computing relates to the amount of information that can be transmitted in a period of time. It relates to volume and technology's capacity to process data. But bandwidth also applies to human behavior and the amount of available energy or mental power we have to handle a situation. If you've ever been stressed or overcommitted, you know that human bandwidth can be a valuable commodity in life. Without it, we can feel exhausted and ill-prepared to deal with the myriad of challenges we face. So, when you are participating in discussions, posts, or any sort of dialogue online, remember to value the bandwidth of others as well as your own. Avoid sharing false or useless information that only clogs up the channels and wastes time. Be selective about the quality of material you share, as it essentially becomes the stuff of the internet. As users, we decide the content that lives in cyberspace, so it's in all of our best interest to keep it meaningful and worthy of everyone's time. Remember your own value. The way you come across online is who you are, so make it count. Take pride in what you write, what you do, and the relationships you form. Most people you meet on the internet are like you in that they just want to connect and be viewed with respect and fondness.
No one should be judged by the color of their skin, their age, their weight, or how much money they have. In this way, the internet can be the great equalizer, able to bring people together under the guise of information and communication.
That said, you may be judged for the quality of your writing and how you choose to express yourself. In a world full of text and content, the written word is pretty important. So take the time to do it well. Use correct spelling and grammar wherever possible, and seize the opportunity to learn from what you see. The internet is not just about danger. It's about education and providing the world with new ways to improve itself. So don't miss out. Pay attention to what you say, know what you're talking about, and people will listen. Remember to share. Everyone has their own area of expertise, even if it's limited. What's yours? If everyone took the time to share some part of their own knowledge, the internet would be an even better place, with a greater sum of collective understanding. Do your part by offering something to the larger information effort. Don't be afraid to share what you know with others, as it only makes cyberspace a stronger and more positive place, a place where we all want to be in the future. Remember to stay cool. Expressing strong opinions online without holding back any emotion is known in the digital world as flaming, and we have likely all done it at some point. Flames can be a lot of fun, both to write and to read, but sometimes the person on the other end doesn't necessarily deserve the heat. While netiquette doesn't forbid flaming, it does ask users to think about their motivations and how to best control their outburst. Flame wars can be entertaining and even enlightening. However, they can quickly turn ugly if the people involved don't know how to dial it down. Out-of-control flaming uses up bandwidth and creates a stressful, angry vibe on the internet. So remember to use it wisely. Remember privacy. Privacy exists in the real world for the same reason it exists in the virtual one, because it offers protection. If you wouldn't dream of rummaging through a friend's personal items, you should never consider reading someone else's email or digital communications. Good Netiquette demands that online privacy be respected in exactly the same way it is in real life. If that one rule were strictly maintained and observed, there would be no need for cybersecurity in the first place. Remember your power. Some people in cyberspace have more power than others, just like in the real world. Every system has its own administrators, and every field has its own experts. Knowing more than others, or having more power than they do, does not give you the right to take advantage of them. If you find yourself in a powerful digital position, be sure to wield this strength with kindness and good intentions. Remember your career. Making an ethical mistake in your personal life will likely have some unfortunate consequences. However, these same misjudgments can also land you in hot water professionally. Bad netiquette in the workplace can be particularly damaging because you may also put the data or reputation of your employer at risk, not to mention, you might lose your job. In fact, some 8% of companies with more than 1,000 employees have fired someone over their misuse of social media. Paying close attention to the way you handle your online movements and communications is imperative in a professional setting, particularly when you must use computer technology to conduct your business through things like virtual meetings, email, and file sharing. And, as a paid employee, a lack of netiquette not only has ethical and professional consequences, it has legal ones. If your bad decisions happen to affect the company or other workers in a really negative way, it is possible they can take legal action against you for the crime you perpetrated while online, like harassment or fraud. Remember, any workplace situations you face can be dealt with using the same wise and kind principles you learned earlier in life. So don't let the excitement and anonymity of the internet convince you otherwise. Remember, we all make mistakes. Given the rapidity of our technological evolution, there will invariably be certain internet users who are not as savvy as others, or maybe as you. Be patient with others and take the time to remember not all generations grew up with smartphones and internet access. Even you were a newbie once. So when someone makes a mistake online, whether it be in etiquette, writing ability, or general knowledge of the platform, turn the situation into a learning opportunity by sharing what you know. Be kind and be helpful. This does not mean you have license to correct everyone you meet online, but rather that it is all right to forgive the mistakes of others and offer your help wherever possible. The values, ideals, virtues, and standards we uphold as people dictate a lot of who we are, what we do, and why we do it. Both online and in the real world, we are expected to make decisions, especially important ones, based on what is right, not what is profitable, easy, or self-serving. When this age-old notion of ethics is applied over the top of a modern invention like the internet, the boundaries of cyberspace become a lot clearer and a lot more complex. It's important to remember that just because the landscape is shifting, it doesn't mean our personal code of morality should too. So what are some of the basic ethics we can focus on when making smart online decisions? Let's explore. Ethical considerations. Moral development. Through life, we move through many stages of understanding and consciousness, and our level of ethical thinking relies primarily on the principles we have learned from the people and events around us. The first step of this larger development begins with an awareness of the rules and the consequences for everything we do. While younger kids are usually motivated to behave out of a fear of punishment, older people must connect personally to the rewards of ethical behavior and grasp the importance of making good choices in a more authentic way. Forming your own code of ethics is a work in progress, and there will be times when you misjudge a situation. It happens. But what's important is to stay focused on learning from your mistakes and moving forward with integrity. Similarly, there will likely be situations online that require you to think seriously about your own ethics and what you believe is right. Listening to your gut and always following your own moral compass is usually enough to illuminate the right path. But remember, there are always adults around to offer advice about such decisions. You just have to ask for help. Empathy. This idea sits at the heart of ethics because it speaks to notions of right and wrong. When you have empathy for something or someone, you are not thinking about a punishment or a reward. You are putting yourself in someone else's shoes and doing what you know is right regardless. How would this person's life be affected if I hacked into their personal records? Using empathy online is essential because it gives you the power to think about how your words or actions may negatively affect or harm others. Don't let the anonymity of the internet fool you into thinking what you do or say doesn't matter. There is a real, live person on the other end of anything you do. Laws and rules. More than ever, laws apply to everything you do online. If you ever doubt what they are, think about your life at home and what people expect of you. Are you allowed to steal things out of your mother's purse? Are you allowed to scream insults at your siblings just because you are frustrated? Probably not. Those same boundaries apply to your cyber life. When you think about it this way, you are less likely to engage in risky online behavior that may jeopardize your safety or that of another person. There will be plenty of websites willing to invite you in with no rules and regulations posted, and therefore it is your personal responsibility to maintain digital citizenship and have these ethics firmly in place before even touching the keyboard. Sharing personal information. The internet has no shortage of images, and with the invention of social media, there are even more. A lot more, actually. Many users post several pictures of themselves in just one day alone, so the amount of visual information out there can be staggering. As a result, personal material is shared in a lot of ways, some of which are not appropriate. Whenever you post a picture of someone else or share their information in any way, it's important to have their consent. When you share material about someone else, either posted by you or someone else, like forwarding a photo someone sent you, posting a link to a video, tagging someone on Facebook, or naming other people in location check-ins, you need to remember you are technically offering up personal information about them, possibly without their permission. Always remember the goal of your sharing. Is it for attention from friends and peers? Does it just feel like something you are supposed to do, but you're not sure why? Maybe you just don't want to be left out of the fun. Regardless of the reason, you must remember the decision to share things online can have real-life effects, so always make the decisions with a clear mind and a kind heart. Cyberbullying. The last piece of this ethical puzzle is one we have likely all heard of: cyberbullying. Because it is such a hot topic, we will discuss it more in future units. To bully someone in cyberspace simply means you are using electronic communication to send intimidating, threatening, or harmful messages to someone else. This can happen on a computer or a smartphone, through text, chatting, websites, or social media. These days, bullies don't have to wait to bother you in person. They can intrude on your privacy and your feelings any time of the day or night. 10 Commandments of Computer Ethics. If you take the ethical considerations discussed here and use them to form some kind of guidebook for online behavior, you will likely come up with something along the lines of the 10 Commandments of Computer Ethics, created by the Computer Ethics Institute, a forum dedicated to providing a moral compass for information technology. Regardless of its religious overtones, this set of principles applies to all users and will help you identify when you, or someone else, might be crossing a digital boundary put in place to offer protection. These commandments seek only to keep everyone on the internet safe, happy, and on their best behavior. Nothing more. If you experience something online that makes you feel uncomfortable or concerned, referring to this list of ethics may help you verbalize and understand exactly how your rights, your work, or your information has been violated.
10 Commandments of Computer Ethics.
1. Thou shalt not use a computer to harm other people. 2. Thou shalt not interfere with other people's computer work. 3. Thou shalt not snoop around in other people's computer files. 4. Thou shalt not use a computer to steal. 5. Thou shalt not use a computer to bear false witness. 6. Thou shalt not copy or use proprietary software for which you have not paid. 7. Thou shalt not use other people's computer resources without authorization or proper compensation. 8. Thou shalt not appropriate other people's intellectual output. 9. Thou shalt think about the social consequences of the program you are writing or the system you are designing. 10. Thou shalt always use a computer in ways that ensure consideration and respect for your fellow humans. And just like that, you are ready to explore, learn, and interact ethically and with integrity. Intellectual property. The characteristics of cybercrime are always shifting, just like the laws tasked with handling it. When something happens that doesn't feel right, new amendments are instituted to make the laws stronger and more effective. Remember Aaron Swartz, who faced a penalty much harsher than his crime? After he died, a bill called Aaron's Law was proposed to amend the CFAA and rein in penalties associated with hacking. But because the types of online materials that are readily available continue to change and adapt, like cybercrime itself, lawmakers are having a difficult time defining and enacting specific laws. Even Aaron's Law has made no real progress. Let's consider the digital boundaries in place today. What laws exist to protect the privacy and assets of all users? Types of intellectual property. Creations of the mind are often referred to as intellectual property. Inventions, literary and artistic works, symbols, names, and images used in different realms of business are all properties resulting from someone's thought process, creativity, or intellectual innovation. As meaningful creations or inventions, they have become valuable assets, and therefore, they are protected under intellectual property rights. Owners of these rights have laws to protect them from theft or abuse and can establish the terms of use or conditions under which someone can utilize the aspects of their special object, product, or service, whatever it is, to prevent unauthorized use of their creative property through various methods. Copyrights. When a product is copyrighted, it enjoys protection against others profiting from it in any way. As a legal right, it grants the creator of the original work full control over its use and distribution. Products that can be copyrighted include songs, photos, paintings, writings, sculptures, or even a performance of some kind. The copyrighted vision has somehow been fixed in tangible form, which means it has been saved in a way that makes it an actual product, like a song on iTunes or a novel, both the printed version or e-version. A copyright is typically held by the creator, unless it was the result of a paid job where the rights were assumed by someone else. It lasts for the life of the creator, plus an additional 70 years. Patents. A patent is a grant from the government that gives exclusive rights to the person who created the invention. It provides protection for a certain amount of time, during which no one can copy, sell, or use the product in any way. Patents typically cover things like machines, electronics, software, chemicals, or pharmaceuticals. An idea by itself is not patentable. There must be an actual product that is novel in some way and relevant to your specific needs. If you patent something, you have laid claim to the way it is designed, processed, and made, and you must be willing to share that information with anyone who wants to make the product. That way, no matter who makes it in the future, it is still yours. Trademarks. This product is not tangible and therefore a little trickier to define. Trademarks are words, colors, sounds, symbols, or even smells associated with a certain product or service. Think about the name Coca-Cola or the symbol for Apple. These trademarks belong to specific companies who demand they not be copied by other businesses. Unlike copyrights and patents, a trademark can possibly last forever or as long as the product is still in use. All trademarks must be officially registered through a government office. Trade secrets. This is secret information used by a business to achieve its success. A trade secret gets its value from being kept secret, and that is why it must be protected. This might be the ingredients in KFC's famous fried chicken recipe, or sales methods, business plans, or client lists. Because there is no registration process for trade secrets, it can be hard to keep them safe. People typically use contracts, non-disclosure agreements, and other security procedures to protect their products as much as possible. That way, the threat of legal action to anyone who betrays their secret becomes a deterrent. Right of publicity. What if you looked at a billboard and saw your own smiling face holding a can of Pepsi? You might be a little surprised and curious about why no one asked you first. This would be a violation of your right of publicity because you have not given your permission for the soda company to use your face. As individuals, we control the right to how our names, likenesses, or personas are used in public. A great way to envision the notion of intellectual property is to consider the role of proprietary software in computing. As a digital asset, this type of software retains its own copyright of the source code, or collection of computer instructions written in readable programming language. A brand of proprietary computer software which is initially free to users is called shareware, because people are encouraged to create and share copies of the program. This term stands in contrast to open source software, however, which means the source code is available for inspection and alteration as well. This allows users to check for bugs and develop a closer assessment of the code itself, and that can lead to a better overall product for everyone. And then there is freeware that is distributed at no cost to the user but does not have an available source code to check out. Viewing source code is important because it provides information about the underlying code of a website, which can affect things like how well it shows up on a Google search. It's worth remembering these protective rights can expire or be forfeited over time and fall into a category known as public domain. With regards to software, this means the distributor has waived the right to protected ownership and is willing to share the software in the public domain, where it can be modified, distributed, and even sold without concerns about copyright, trademark, or patent. This offering stands in contrast to the more common case of software, where exclusive rights and licenses have been established to determine usage rights. Digital Millennium Copyright Act. The reason why Aaron's Law and many others have not yet been enacted is a clear sign of just how quickly the problem of cybercrime is growing. As a nation, we are still struggling to get a grip on the situation and establish the right laws for the job. One such example is the Digital Millennium Copyright Act, DMCA. First signed into law under the Clinton administration in 1998, this U.S. copyright law put two treaties into effect. It criminalized actions meant to harm or manipulate technology related to copyrighted works, and it made maneuvering around access control illegal. In other words, the DMCA made it totally not okay to strip digital works of their controlled access features and/or spread these works without the knowledge of the owner. Downloading any digital information, movies, music, text, without paying or asking permission will now put you in direct violation of the DMCA. While this protective act did assist the efforts of digital rights management within the music and movie industries, copyright infringements these days are so common, no one can really keep up with them all. The protective wall is simply too weak to keep out all the ongoing access problems, particularly because online piracy is often perpetrated not by real hackers, but by regular folks just looking for free entertainment. Yes, a lot has changed since the act was first signed over a decade ago, but the solution to controlling public access and protecting intellectual property rights remains elusive. Online privacy. Even though the states have all created different laws to address issues of rights protection, the goals have remained the same throughout: to ensure the privacy of online activities. Here are some of the digital rights they aim to protect. Children's online privacy. Considering the dark underbelly of the web, protecting children from negative effects is critical. This involves preventing marketers and advertisers from targeting children with inappropriate content around alcohol, tobacco, firearms, or pornography. It can prevent the disclosure of a child's personal information, including their identity and location. E-reader privacy. Some states have taken action to ensure libraries and their systems are able to provide federally funded services to the public without fear of being compromised. These laws protect a patron's records, transactions, and borrowing history. Any such personal information can only be accessed through a legal search warrant issued by a judge. Privacy policies for websites and online services. These laws require the operator of a commercial website to use their privacy policy as a way to explain how they respond to a web browser. This gives a visitor the ability to decide if they want their personal information tracked throughout the site over time, including those made by a third party who might be paying the website for the privilege. Making false or misleading statements in privacy policies. Given how important this information is to the public, it is vital for sites on the internet to be completely honest about their practices. Anything less is considered a fraudulent crime. Notice of employee email communications. A few states have also required employers to notify their new workers that all professional email communications will be monitored on some level and/or exposed to the public network of the Internet. In this way, employees can make the conscious decision as to how their private messages can and will be viewed. Understanding these different intellectual properties is important because, again, it illustrates the different legal boundaries on the Internet and their need for guardianship. Having your list of customer passwords stolen by hackers is one thing, but having your hard-earned creative property stolen right out from under you before it can be patented, copyrighted, or protected by the laws mentioned above is far more troubling. While business-related items like account numbers and codes certainly demand security, losing the creative fruits of your labor can be even more devastating, both personally and professionally. In this modern age, hackers don't have to try to copy someone's plans or designs. They can shortcut the whole process by simply stealing them online.
Knowledge check. Test your knowledge of new information by answering these questions and then review the feedback. Question 1. Which of the following would be a criminal offense under the Computer Fraud and Abuse Act, CFAA? A student using a computer in a school library when no one else is in the room. Although this might be against school rules, there is nothing criminal about appropriately logging on to a school computer without anyone else in the room. A student secretly finding out another student's network password and using it to log into a school computer. This situation falls under the category of breaching a password without authorization and is a criminal offense, although a student would not likely be charged. A student accidentally spilling a drink on a computer and damaging it. Because the damage was an accident, the student did not commit a criminal offense. A student seeing grades on a teacher's computer while talking to the teacher about an assignment. Because the student accidentally saw the grades and did not breach any boundaries or access the grades purposely, it is not a criminal offense. Question 2. Kyle just joined a new forum about the pros and cons of owning a Mac computer versus a Windows PC. Kyle becomes extremely outraged by someone's polite post about how they prefer their Mac. He starts insulting the other person, calling them rude names and telling them they should not be allowed on the forum anymore. What is the term for Kyle's online behavior? Flaming. The term flaming refers to an outburst of emotions that are usually negative and sometimes hurtful. Firing. Consider an option that refers to an outburst of, sometimes hurtful, emotion. Breaching. Breaching occurs when a boundary is crossed without permission. Consider an option that refers to an outburst of, sometimes hurtful, emotion. Ghosting. Ghosting refers to the act of withdrawing all communication without any explanation. Consider an option that refers to an outburst of, sometimes hurtful, emotion. Question 3. Lovin just obtained some new photo editing software. He notices a bug in the software and decides to go to the source code and make a few changes. He chats and collaborates with some people online about the improvements he's made. What type of software has Lovin most likely obtained? Shareware. Shareware is free to purchase but may eventually require a fee to keep using. It does not provide access to the underlying source code. Proprietary. Proprietary software is not usually free and does not allow access to the source code. Freeware. Freeware is free of cost but does not allow the user to access the source code. Open source. Open source software is free and allows users to access and edit the source code.
Conclusion. Even though there are a lot of things to remember about online ethics and hacking, the main message is as basic as the one you learned as a child. Always use your best judgment and make decisions based on what you know to be right. Honesty, kindness, and empathy are still important traits in this world, even if no authority is physically present to hold you accountable. Using the Internet and all of its wonderful benefits is a privilege, and it is your personal responsibility to treat the platform with respect and appreciation. When you do, the vast and vivid realm of information opens up, and there is no end to what you can learn, do, and create. So for all of the effort it takes to consider your ethical choices, it's worth it.